All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Fans of United podcast. Finally reached episode number 10. Chris Wimmer, along with former United player Devin McTavish.
Hello.
We've got Eric Hunsaker with us, as always. And tonight we have a special guest to kick the show off, Mark Washo, former DC United employee, also former Washington Freedom.
I was the president and general manager.
Wow. Right. Multiple hats. That's what Eric wears for us over here. So, all right, let's kick off episode 10. Well, the reason we brought Mark on, just kind of wanted to touch base. Mark, can you tell the listeners what you've been doing with the San Antonio Scorpions out there in NASL?
Yeah, sure. No, thanks. I saw your email, and it looks like you guys have been checking out the San Antonio Scorpions attendance. They had a huge opening day a couple of weeks back, followed up by a second home game with an equally strong crowd. And, you know, it's just been a great success story, you know. I mean, my current company now is Playbook Management International, and we're the ones who are operating the club. But beyond that, it's just a great success story for the North American Soccer League and, you know, second division soccer as a whole America. So we're really pleased with the way that's going right now.
Yeah, it's been great. We noticed it. And actually, I think a couple episodes back, we talked about how good those numbers were and that we were actually a little bit jealous of that. I don't remember who mentioned it, but we thought that it's pretty amazing to do that in Texas where there's already two MLS teams. Usually you would think you would get numbers like that from a kind of soccer or professional soccer hungry state or area, but that's not the case out there. They just seem to have really good support, especially at that level.
Yeah. Well, you know, first and foremost, me personally, I can't take too much credit because I haven't really been there other than once or twice. But, you know, our company and Michael Hitchcock and Andy Smith and the group that's out there, you know, we've learned a lot, right? You mentioned that was with DC United. Well, all the guys in our company, for the most part, were with DC United at some point in our history. And when you're with a great organization like that, you learn a lot. You learn how to, you know, brand a team right from the beginning and market things properly and, you know, make sure you have the right structure in place from a ticket sales perspective. So to everybody's credit, we can call it the playbook, and we created a playbook and executed it pretty darn well so far. So, but then again, you know, it's a long season too, right? Two games and a lot more to go. And unfortunately, the team hasn't done too well on the field. So that's the other side we got to worry about a little bit too, you know? So, but no, it's great to see the crowd reaction, and they've done a great job down there. There's no doubt.
Yeah, well, you guys have popped up on our radar a couple of times, so you're definitely doing a couple of things right. I mean, you've got good visibility, good profile. And, you know, because I'm in the video business, I've noticed you guys have nice, like, I like your rollout video. I like the bits where the fans came in and were selecting seats. And, of course, the fact that you broke ground on your own stadium, I mean, you know, that's something that we really covet around here as well as, you know, you as a United fan and being with the organization, you know, I'm sure you're aware of that.
Oh.
For some reason, we keep having, like, little connections with these Scorpions because we were talking to Connor Shanofsky, DC United defender who'd gone down to Fort Lauderdale, and he came and played you guys. The only thing I couldn't find was exactly what had happened. There was a little bit of, what do you call it, handbags, a little extracurricular stuff going on the field in one of the games, but I couldn't find any video of it. I think it was, like, a little bit, some players got a little scrappy at the end. Were you there for that, Mark?
You know, I wasn't, unfortunately, just some personal reasons, I wasn't able to attend. And I was going to go to the first game and wasn't able to do that. But actually, maybe you guys should get the head coach, Tim, on soon or, you know, Michael Hitchcock because, you know, they're living and breathing it every day down there. But, yeah, I mean, you know, look, I think when a team's new like they are and they're an expansion team and they're playing against teams that, you know, have been around for a season, you know, granted, you know, a lot of the rosters have shuffled, as you know, but as they do in MLS. But, you know, you still have the core group of a lot of teams they played and, you know, they're trying to make their mark, you know, and when things aren't going great on the field, sometimes, you know, things get a little chippy, as they say out there. So, but it's been, to your point, it's been, you know, that's just the thing that we think, hey, look, the stuff on the field, you could correct and get better. It's a long season and, you know, teams oftentimes do better as the season goes on, clearly, you know.
Sure. Well, you guys seem to have, you're doing it right. You got a good fan base that's really engaged. You've got your stadium coming up. You know, I like your branding. I like the way you guys are doing things out there. It's looking really good so far.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier, and again, they've done a great job, and Michael Hitchcock and those guys, you know, they get a lot of credit on the sense that, you know, they engage the fans early, you know, right from the naming of the team. They had a name the team contest to they had logo submissions from graphic designers that could submit their logo ideas, and then fans voted all the way down to, you know, the web design. And then they had, you know, social media, you know, they had a Facebook war with another team. So just
awesome.
All along the way, they just done a lot of good things. And, of course, look, the new stadium adds a lot more excitement too, even though they're playing in a big high school type stadium. Anytime you can make an announcement and show off stadium drawings and paintings that you see on their website, that just ignites the fan base even more so.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, we've been there, done that a couple rounds here. So every time they do that, it's starting to lose its luster, you know. But just for comparison's sake, I was checking out the statistics for and I know you only had two games, but DC's had six home games, and the attendance statistics are pretty similar. Right now, DC's averaging just about 13,700, give or take, you guys had almost that much for the home opener out there in San Antonio, and you're averaging – it looks like you're averaging more than 11,000 people, but from what I could tell, the capacity of the stadium is 11,000, so that's a good problem to have. But I really wanted to reach out to you is because of your connections and because you had success here, you said, you know, the Scorpions weren't doing so well on the field, but the thing is right now United's doing really well on the field, you know, 7-game unbeaten streak, and it just – and it seems really hard for them to fill the stadium They capped the upper bowl, so they're not going to be seeding that and counting that, but the official or unofficial number is going to be somewhere in about 19,000 so. And what kind of challenges do they have there? You know firsthand, what kind of challenges is DC United facing with getting attendance in there?
Well, first thing I would say is actually last year we were fortunate enough that Kevin Payne and Steven Zach brought myself and Michael Hitchcock and PMI and we did about a 9 to 10 month engagement with them, and you know, around that the same time last year, they kind of realized that, you know, maybe they needed to do some things a little differently in their ticket sales approach and their structure and their staffing and things of that nature. So it was kind of nice for us. I mean, kind of, you know, coming back home, as the saying goes, and they were very open. You know, they were very open and candid about, you know, some of the areas where maybe they think they could have been doing some things a little different, and allowed us to kind of give our, you know, outside eye looking in kind of opinion, you know, which they, you know, they adopted a lot of the suggestions that we had, and they made some structural changes, made some tweaks to their staffing plan, put together some new programs. But, you know, like anything else, sometimes when you make new changes, you bring new people in. Just like a team on the field, you know, it takes a little bit of time for that team to come together, you know, and implement their new ideas, you know, off the field as well. So I think just, again, being intimately involved last year, and the fact that they actually brought us in and said, hey, you know, maybe we need a different perspective on a ticket sales side of things, you know, I think was good. And from what we saw, you know, they're doing all the right changes, and they embraced the ideas, and, you know, they were very open. It wasn't like they were closed off to those suggestions and what have you. Now, beyond that, clearly, when it comes to attendance, there's a lot more than just what goes on in the ticket office every day, you know. And again, we think that, you know, you'll start seeing as the season goes on and middle of the year, and, you know, when the youth soccer really starts heating up, I think, you know, they're gonna have some stronger results. But, you know, clearly the weather hasn't gone their way, as we all know. You know, they started the season pretty early this year, you know. Devin, maybe you recall, but, you know, I guess what, you know, starting early March, that's a little tough when your core audience hasn't really started playing yet. And then, you know, not to mention, look, we're in the middle of Caps Mania right now, right? So,
right.
You know, everybody's, you know, your sports fan, and, you know, Nationals just start up.
Nationals,
you know,
are doing,
yeah, the Nationals are another team in the area that's struggling. I listen to the radio all the time, and they seem to be having the same issue. They got these young talents. I don't know how they did tonight with Bryce Harper, but they're in the same area, the same fan base, same kind of customers that they're aiming for. And, you know, you think they're doing a good job. They're marketing. DC United does their marketing, and they're winning. You know, the Nationals are having an amazing year to get started. And I still hear that they're having struggles filling the stadium too, you know. So I wonder if it's just something specific to this area. Is there too many options? What kind of obstacles did you guys have to overcome when you were with United?
Well, clearly, the economy is difficult, right, and it's affecting all kinds of sports. I mean, we with PMI do a lot of work both on the professional side but also collegiate athletics. I mean, we're doing a lot of work on the ticket sales side of the business, and, you know, 3-4 years ago, you know, that wasn't even an option. Like, colleges weren't even thinking about proactive ticket sales and so on and so forth. So, you know, the economy has added to it. Yeah, to your point, a lot of different options in the marketplace. You know, everybody's got HD TVs now and surround sound, and, you know, next thing you know, they're going to be pumping, you know, popcorn smells and nacho cheese into your house, you know. So, you know, it's easier, you know, sometimes, you know, it makes it easier to say, hey, you know, if the weather's dicey, I'm going to stay home and check this game on TV and so on and so forth. So, and then, you know, one more thing, I think it's weird, you know, for DC United at least, they're kind of almost a victim of their own success in the sense that early days, you know, all the championships and going to the MLS Cup. I mean, you know, maybe fans kind of got spoiled, you know, like
a little jaded.
Yeah, you know, like first round of playoffs, like, oh, we're not going to come the first round. We'll wait for the second round. So sometimes, you know, that happens, and fans, like, you know, they get complacent. They're like, okay, well, you know, United struggled a little bit, hasn't been to the playoffs in a few seasons, and yeah, maybe they're waiting for something to start happening, you know, in that regard too, a little bit.
Yeah,
and then, you know, look, the elephant in the room, right? Nobody wants to talk about it, but, you know, look, RFK, you know, creates its own challenges. It creates an amazing atmosphere on one end, but we all know the reality, and, you know, some of the, you know, United's been pretty public about, you know, some of their challenges on that front as well, you know?
Yeah, we've talked about the benefits because obviously United is well known for their supporters groups, and Devin's played there, and he's told us on many occasions how much energy they bring to the players and how important they are just as an aspect of playing at RFK. And we look at these new stadiums that open up all the time, and we just think, can you imagine those supporters groups right on top of the action and how much more that would even add, you know? So even just the layout, not the fact that it's old, but it's not even soccer-specific or friendly at that, you know?
Right. I mean, if you look at the success of the new MLS teams, it's because they have – stadiums inside of the city limits that are, you know, made for soccer, more or less. Looking at Portland, successful. Looking at Vancouver, it's been successful. Seattle Stadium
Sporting KC.
Is there a downtown Kansas City, really?
Yeah.
But it's these stadiums that are soccer specific, and that's what we're talking about. And that's what I think, you know, the Scorpions are doing well, is they're building a soccer specific stadium in a city that doesn't really have necessarily competition in terms of sports. They have the Spurs, and that's about it. So we know soccer is growing in America, but we kind of have to cater to the fan as well. And I think soccer fans aren't maybe as much as the suburban families that they used to be, as more of the upcoming generation that has decided to live in the cities, and the young professionals that don't want to travel too far out to go see the teams that they love
and have money and time, unlike a father of four.
Right. Right. And that's where I feel DC United is being punished for, you know, playing at RFK. While it's in the city, it's, as Mark, you mentioned, it's not up to the standards that some of these new teams' stadiums are at.
Yeah, and let's look at the corridor that's grown up around Verizon Center, you know. I think that's a good example of a downtown stadium that's integrated into the city and has become part of the culture. And then you've had that influx of a whole, like, area. It's now a neighborhood of shops and boutiques and restaurants and destinations. You know, the Spy Museum's up there, and it's super vibrant. You know, why am I telling you, Devin? You live there.
I do. I'll be honest, that's the only reason I went to Wizards game, is because it was two blocks away.
They tried to replicate right feel and that vibe and that whole little, you know, mini city thing over at Nationals Park, and it just seems it's still empty, right? I mean, is that mostly the economy?
Well, it's still growing. I mean, I shot there. I filmed there last week, and I'm filming there again this week. And I'll tell you something that struck me. I shot, just so you know, Mark, I shot the Orioles commercials last week, and we're shooting at the Nats right now.
Cool.
And something that occurred to me was soccer is a bargain. You know, we were in there at the stadium, and I was looking around at what the tickets cost, the merch, and then the concessions, and, you know, the extras, and then the good seats. Soccer is a bargain, man, especially, you know, the DC United. Perhaps, you know, we need to enjoy what we have while we have it. If we get into a beautiful new stadium, maybe all that goes up. But I was thinking about, you know, what I spend when I go to take a couple kids to RFK versus what it was like at Nats Park, where, you know, it's, you know, you could drop a couple $100 really, really fast, and that's just scratching the surface.
Yeah, well, I think soccer's also been painted and positioned as, you know, it's a family-friendly type environment. You know, hey, the games are only, what, 2.5 hours, you know, beginning start to finish, and everybody knows that, whereas sometimes baseball could, you know, really drag on for 3-4 hours sometimes. And you know, but you guys made a point about getting into new stadium. You know, after I left DC United, I went up to the Metro Stars, and we were playing in cavernous Giant Stadium, and obviously they finally now built Red Bull Park. And then I was fortunate to go out to Chicago, where we opened Toyota Park. And, you know, man, you know, what a great feeling that was to finally be in your own building. Now, granted, you guys made the comment it wasn't in a downtown-type setting, which I think that is, you know, ideally, you know, the ideal situation for a soccer stadium, you know? But we were still always envious of the, you know, I would, you know, when our teams would make the playoffs in New York or in Chicago, came back to D.C. and the fandom going on for those playoff games, you know, when that place is rocking and Screaming Eagles and Barb Robert bouncing up and down, like, I mean, you swear you've been transplanted to Europe somewhere, you know?
Yeah, that beat it.
You know? So that's one thing that's still that just, again, that's, well, on one end you could say RFK's old and, you know, needs renovating and so on and so forth. And granted, they would be awesome if they got to a new stadium, and it's too bad because they're the one franchise that should have a stadium by now. You know, there's still the fans are unmatched, I think, when you guys, you know, commented earlier, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you think, just as a prediction, do you think they'll ever be able to get this done? Do you think what's holding it up? I mean, you were there, and I'm sure even back when you were with United, I'm sure they were looking for a new stadium. And, you know, it's not something new. It's something that's been going on for a while. Do you think it'll happen? And what's the biggest obstacle to getting the new stadium or fixing the one they have? It seems like it should be a no-brainer, right?
I agree. You know, and honestly, I would say, in being in other MLS markets and working for other teams, I think DC United, once they get their own stadium, it'll be unbelievable. I mean, I think the reaction will be strong. I think it'll be strong all the way around, you know, from, you know, single game fans and families to, you know, the diehard supporters, the European soccer fans, or the corporate community. I mean, I think they would just crush it, you know, with a new stadium. I really feel that because it's kind of here in this market, you know.
Yeah.
And man, God, you know, Kevin Payne, man, if there's ever a person that's just, you know, you feel for him in the sense that, man, he's been, you know, pounding this thing for a long time. And, you know, he's working tirelessly to get it done. And it's got to be so frustrating because I know he gets so close in different times. And look, I was with the Hendricks, the owners of the Freedom. And at one point we had kind of talked about, hey, could we do some things, you know, with both clubs and maybe joint ownership and so on and so forth. And, you know, they've got like 10 or 12 legitimate stadium plans. Like, we're talking full-on drawings and plans in different parts of the city. And I mean, it's not like they're not doing anything, right? They're doing their work and they're doing what they can. So, man, you just hope between MLS, the city of DC, and you know the ownership group that's there now, and it just seems that they deserve a stadium, right? I mean, of all the teams in MLS,
absolutely.
Yeah, we hope so.
And who would have guessed? You know, 16 years ago, that they'd be the one. DC United would be the one still without one. You know,
the lone.
Yeah, really.
The lone team without their own soccer-specific stadium. It's hard to watch the Impact, you know, crowd 80,000 people in to a brand-new team. But
and their new stadium up there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting new stadiums. Well,
you know, when to your point, look, when KC gets the stadium and then Rail, Salt Lake, you know, Columbus in the beginning, you know, you're like, how can DC United be the one that's still in this dilemma? You know?
Yeah, with four stars, with four MLS Cups to their storied career. And, I mean, you know, in my mind, and I know I'm biased, but in DC is really where the supporters group started. I mean, I know that they march down the streets in Portland now, and in Seattle you've got, you know, Sounders Army and everything, but all that really started here. I mean, the Barra Brava, the Screaming Eagles, I remember going to the stadium in 96, and those these were just rocking, and that was back before anybody was doing that, you know? I think these guys are the originals.
Yeah.
They set the standard.
They deserve it.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Hey, can I ask you guys a quick question back? I'm just curious your opinion on this, because, you know, the Baltimore rumor seems like it's out there and has been out there for a while. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
They just released the press release yesterday that they're teaming up with the Bohemians to be a development to them, right? Yeah, that doesn't do anything except for make that rumor seem more realistic, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because the Bohemians are a new team. It's not like they've been here and they're developed. So there's a new team, and now you're going out there and saying that you're kind of teaming up with them to help develop players. And it's kind of like, is that like a little olive branch to the Baltimore area, you know, to see how people react to that? I see them possibly leaving. I just don't think you can hang out in RFK forever, you know? I'm in Northern Virginia, and I would prefer that they came out, like, to Northern Virginia. I know Devin talks about putting the team in the city, but the city of D.C., especially, just the politics are crazy, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to make progress. Yeah, they've got a history of not making progress. I don't mean to weigh in on that, but it's just and to answer your question, Mark, I'm hoping that the D.C. Baltimore axis is a bluff. I'm hoping that that's to get the attention of the D.C. City Council to say, listen, you've got the real potential to lose this. You know, you can't take D.C. United for granted. We've got to be proactive and be out developing things. And for the City Council to do something besides, stealing with both hands and then defending themselves from stealing with both hands, you know, and, you know, doing being proactive about keeping this storied franchise here. I think that it's something that no one thinks DC United will go anywhere. I mean, it's named DC United, right? But I see the Baltimore card because the city of Baltimore is very proactive in economic development, especially sports related. I mean, they've got big pieces of land up there. They've got proffers to offer. So I'd hate to see it happen, but I think it is. I think it's a big stick.
You know, they never thought the Dodgers would leave Brooklyn, did they?
Right, or the Baltimore Colts. Baltimore Colts go to Indianapolis. Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. So.
It is a business. That's what the sad part about it is. It comes down to, you know, as much as we're fans and their fans are so loyal, it's a business, and you understand that. But
yeah.
So, Mark, I know you wrote a book about this whole kind of concept, right? Break into sports.
Yeah. Thanks for remembering that, Chris. I just got a whole shipment in, like literally this morning. Like another 1,000 showed up because I ran out. So I got a whole stack. If you want.
All right. Yeah. Nice. But do you get a lot of people that want to do that? They want to get into sports and the business and kind of doing ticket sales? I mean, it seems like it could be that's a hard way to get in right now, huh?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's unbelievable the way sports business as a whole has kind of exploded in this country. You know, you've got over 350 plus sports management programs now. Wow. You've got, you know, I don't even know the number of graduate programs. I'm actually fortunate because I'm an adjunct professor with Georgetown Sports Management Program, you know, their master's program. And,
cool.
You know, there's that program's growing, and there's sports management master's programs all around the country. And, you know, there's online courses now. And so there's a lot of resources. You know, there's conferences and sales combines all around the country. And, you know, this is the biggest growth area as far as careers are concerned, without a doubt. I mean, again, economy getting tough. Sponsorship dollars getting, you know, a little bit tighter. And then, you know, you look around and you say, okay, well, even if we have 5,000 empty seats or, you know, 3,000, you know, times 20 games or times 10 games, you know, that ends up being a lot of seats times, you know, 30, 40 bucks a ticket, you know, and it's a lot of revenue left on the table. So, ticket sales and breaking into the industry that way is definitely something that, you know, we, PMI, we're just heavily involved. I mean, I've got 10 open positions right now that we're recruiting, and almost all of them are ticket sales or revenue generating type, you know, opportunities. So I think, you know, that's just going to be the reality because, you know, it's getting harder to, you know, break through the clutter and, you know, how, you know, with a small advertising budget. Even if you had a $1 million advertising budget, which sounds like a lot of money, like we had one time in Chicago, I mean, you can't really even make a dent on that marketplace with that kind of money, you know, let alone when we were shrunk down to like $300,000 or $400,000, you know. So, you know, developing those one-on-one fan relationships, as we like to call them, and you know, one-on-one to each coach and one-on-one to each parent's, you know, kid's parent. I mean, that's really the way you got to go. Corporations, same thing. You got to go on meetings, go to chamber events, the whole thing. Otherwise, you know, the big billboard down the middle of the city somewhere. That's all well and good, but is that really like calling somebody to go purchase a ticket? You know?
Really? Yeah, exactly. Is that putting butts in seats? Good point.
Exactly. And there's just so much clutter. I mean, you know, what, 80 million TV channels and, you know, website. It's just really hard to get your message out. And I think that's why there's so many opportunities with, you know, professional ticket sales development these days.
Well, you guys seem like, you know, the Scorpions are doing a good job. I just clicked a second ago, and I see that you guys have 11,000 plus likes on your Facebook page, which it sounds like is the capacity attendance at your stadium.
You must have made everybody like the thing to get in, huh?
Totally. Well, you know, social media is an important part of it. You know, when I was with the Freedom, for example, we didn't even hire a traditional public relations person. We went out and hired what used to be called new media, and now I guess now it's called digital media. But we were like, look, you know, you need to be all about Facebook. You need to be all about Twitter. We want our players to tweet. We were all about trying to create good content, you know, so not, you know, every day we're just not hitting somebody with a different ticket package or a message. It was, you know, insider interviews and inside the locker room. And we had players taking video cameras on the planes and, you know, in the hotel lobbies. And, you know, it's cool because if you're, you know, if you're a fan, you get, you know, more, you know, kind of behind the scenes footage and looks.
Yeah.
And,
unique,
you know,
access.
I think that's. Yeah, so like with and look, the database and name captures, you know, when you go into like the Scorpions, we had zero database when we went in there, you know. So, you know, you're like, hey, we got to do stuff like create Facebook wars and sweepstakes to get people liking you in the stadium. And, you know, everybody's got these little iPhones and iPads these days. So it's kind of making it a little bit easier to kind of do those things while you're in stadium, you know. Devin, are you still on Twitter, right?
I never was on Twitter. Never got on Twitter. Come on.
That's great, though, Mark, because that's an ongoing joke we do every week.
He finally did get an iPhone, though. I don't know if he knows how to use it, but he's got it.
Mark, I'm kind of old school in that fact.
Sorry,
he's the youngest guy on the podcast, and he's not on Twitter.
Dayro's on Twitter.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He's all over the place.
I think most of the team is. Yeah, most of the team is. But I'm not interesting enough to be on Twitter. That's what I think.
Well, Mark, speaking of the social media, Eric is really, really smart with the YouTube stuff, and we've done a couple video podcasts already. And like it or not, Devin has to be on those, right? Since he's part of the podcast.
Yep.
But something interesting that I thought, because I remember, are you still on the board of directors for DC Scores?
You know, I am still actively supporting DC Scores, but I resigned about, 8 to 10 months ago when I really got active with PMI, and I was like, okay, this is what it's really like to start a new business, you know. It was so I kind of felt like I was shortchanging them a little bit, you know. But the good news is they have an Inspired Art Gala coming up, and I'm going to go to it and participate. I think Benny Olson's like the keynote, you know, guest for that night. And, so they're just, I'm a huge, Kevin Payne, way back in the early day of DC United when DC Scores first launched, one of the first charities that the club aligned itself with. And they happened to be in New York when I was there, and they happened to be in Chicago when I was there. So, I'm still pretty actively involved, even though I'm not an official board member anymore. Although I'm sure I'm still, on the half the material that they have, They probably haven't taken me out
yet.
It's
cool because Devin started a thing on the video podcast where he wears a shirt for a local or a nonprofit soccer organization. So I thought that would be a kind of good connection there, DC Scores. Maybe we could support them in one of our upcoming video podcasts,
They'd love it. Amy, their executive director last year, she took to the streets and tried to dribble a soccer ball for 12 straight hours to raise money, So.
it's a great organization. It certainly is.
All right. Well, we don't want to keep you on too long, Mark. We're going to do our recap, but we appreciate you coming in and giving us your insight, and especially with your connections with the area and the team.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's fun to not be forgotten all the way. So, I'm still up there at the Gaithersburg Soccerplex, and,
awesome.
Still trying to keep my hands in the pot as much as I can in that regard. But, I do appreciate it. Thanks. It's been fun, rapping soccer, DC United, Scorpions, the whole thing. And, Devin, it was good to reconnect with you. So.
Yeah. Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. We really appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
all the best.
Bye now.
All right, everybody. That was Mark Washo with Playbook Management International. Just talking some DC United, attendance, ticket sales, stadium, all that good stuff. Catching up with him and for the next segment, we're going to go ahead and do a little recap of the Houston Dynamo DC United game. Obviously, DC United won 3-2 at home.
Nice
sloppy field conditions, but it was like a tit for tat, right? They score back.
Yeah.
Neither team wanted to really give in. What did you guys think overall about that match? Pretty good, right?
Traded punches.
Yeah, they
did.
It was nice to see.
It was a grind out, man. It was like two smash mouth teams getting in there and just grinded,
It was, and that's what's so good that they won, because I feel like never in the past 2-3 years wouldn't have won those games.
Yeah.
You know
I mean,
they showed the character and they showed resiliency to, even though they lost two leads, they came back and finished on a high note, got the 3 points at home in front of the fans on a dreary, rainy night, which it seems to be every time DC United has a home game.
Yeah, but that field condition was the worst. I mean, we have seen rainy conditions. Even Mark talked about
a lot of guys going there.
What was the difference? I mean, was it raining that much? I wasn't there. I couldn't tell. It didn't seem like it was raining more, but wow. It seemed like every 2 minutes someone was falling. And I even wondered if that was if that played a role in Dudar getting injured again. I don't know, but
hope not. But, different rains do different things, and it was clearly slick out there. I mean, whatever the actual physical thing happening was, whether the water was pooling and not draining, or whether it was a condition of the way heat and temperature or soil, it was definitely slick. People were going down.
So what do you think? We'll just do a run by run of the first goal. DC United did the thing that they were doing early in the season, but that they weren't doing very well, which was just sending the long ball up, right? But this time, BMAC put that thing right on Pontius's run,
BMAC.
Yeah, it wasn't so much of a hopeful ball as we kind of had seen earlier in the year from the back.
That was a nice low driver ball.
Yeah, it was well placed, and that all starts with a run from the forward and behind the backs.
Sure.
Yeah, that,
And that was a nice target ball, you know. You're right, it wasn't a searching ball, it was a target ball.
Right, right, right. And Pontius showed a lot of composure in that, getting around the keeper.
So
and,
calm, he just teed it up, man. Yeah. It was just like,
yeah,
right about on his head right there, you know.
Yeah, it was so nice, because a lot of times that situation, the forwards get around the keeper and they think, okay, goalie's out, have to shoot, have to shoot,
panic
have to shoot.
Mode.
Yeah.
You know, he just chilled, laid back. I'll just chip this one in right into his head and goal. We're up 1-0. So it turned out to be a good combination up there.
Yeah, Santos was even calm because he was a little deep in the box. And when he saw Pontius teeing it up, he took a few steps back and repositioned himself. And it was just nice. I watched the replay a couple times and saw him, like, just create that space, you know, and the header was beautiful, man. He put it right in there, and there you go. 1-0, you know.
Hey, to that point, I really think that the forwards especially, but the offense in general, is really starting to work like a team and seems to be anticipating where the others are going to be, knowing, you know, who runs where, when, you know what I mean?
Right.
Those little things that only come from playing together. I mean, especially Pontius and Mr. Santos doing great things together, very much in harmony.
Yeah, and it's happening pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, both their confidence is rising at the same time, which is great, too.
It's great, right? Yeah. And then, you know, Dero getting on the score.
Yeah, what did you think about that?
It was.
I want to know what he thought about that. He looked a little surprised, you know. I think, did that just go in?
You know, here's the thing. If you're crossing the ball, if you're whipping the ball in with, you know,
kind of
towards the goal, you're aiming at the back post for that particular reason. If no one gets a head on it or a foot on it, then it's going to go in.
Right.
And, I mean, it was a fabulous ball in. And, again, it came with a run from a forward, Pontius. And he doesn't get his head to it, but he distracts Tally Hall. And with a perfectly placed ball, it's right in the back of the net, and they're up, what, 2-1. So,
So whether Pontius touched it or not, he clearly played a role in the success of that ball going in. That's
absolutely.
And I understand that they took it out of the goal and they checked it for hair gel to see whether or not Pontius did that.
It's a little anticlimactic, right? I'm thinking, man, all this time has gone by. You know, I was even on Twitter and I said, oh, Dero's going to get the next one. I just feel it, you know. But I was thinking like one of his blasts or, you know, just some amazing.
You're thinking
of one of those runs that he did later in
the
game, you know. It's like. Looking like
or even a
something, right? But that, I was like,
you're way off.
Wait for it. Okay, go ahead and celebrate. Like, whatever.
And then I noticed somebody had replied to you on Twitter about his record of scoring against his former clubs, and then boom, it went right
in. Who was that guy that replied?
I don't know. Somebody.
Well, he's got a lot of former clubs, so that makes sense.
He could do that every week.
Right.
Well, you know, that's an interesting little tidbit, is that he's playing – you know, he's got 5 games in a row against former clubs, Devin, if you count New York, Houston,
San Jose,
right?
Houston again.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, he's been around. He's still so.
Well, good. Yeah,
it's good to open it up.
Hopefully he'll get hot now.
Yeah.
Not that he wasn't before. Again, he was putting out assists and doing work on, you know, getting forward and getting back.
Sure.
But it's always good to have Dero's name on the score sheet.
And breaking up plays as they're trying to come through the midfield as well, you know, his defensive effort, and just holding, you know. But, you know, I've taken it seriously to heart.
A point that Chris made earlier in the year is the defending on crosses and what happened.
Yeah.
Second goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing with Dudar going out. I
know.
He's becoming a big piece of that defense.
Almost
I think.
Too big. You know what I mean?
A little bit, and Russell can, you know, he can slide in there and you know, I think he's a very good center back, but it's a little different when you start the game out wide and then you slide in.
You got to push in the center.
Yeah, you got to change your mentality a little bit, you know. It's not really how you prepared for the game mentally, and then you have to make that transition. It's not always that easy.
Perry.
Yeah, don't even get me started on Perry Kitchen. I couldn't stand him in defense last year. And as soon as Dudar goes down, they put him back there, and I'm thinking, well, at least he's on the right side. And the thing is, like, during the game, John Harkes is saying, see, the problem with that cross that ended up in a goal was because Russell was ball-watching. But if you watch the replay, Russell's not ball-watching. He's yelling out to Perry Kitchen to put more pressure on the winger because he's just laid off. So he just gave him that cross, no pressure at all. So that cross comes in, no pressure from Kitchen on the outside goal. And then later, I don't know what Perry's doing. He seems like he has all the time in the world, kicks it right off of Corey Ash's face, basically, right? Like, I don't know where he's playing that ball.
Yeah, he kind of got kind of got caught with the ball on his foot. And,
yeah.
You know, made
those
a,
are the,
made a
those are the
decision,
things
but.
That used to just frustrate me to see him back there last year on defense. And that's why I'm saying maybe we count too much on Dudar, because should your defense, you know, rely on one guy that much? I mean, that's a little dangerous. He's going to go down. He has a history of injuries. He went down, and now I haven't seen, but is he out for a couple games? I haven't seen the injury report. How long have he gone? But
yeah, what'd they say, 3 to 4?
So now you
like
got
that?
A
weeks?
Mixed match. Yeah. You know?
He keeps re-aggravating the same thing. Is a real bad thing from a medical perspective.
Right.
You know?
He's not letting it get healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I saw a report that said a couple games. I'm like, you know what? If this is the third time he's hurt it, he's going to really have to take a ginger on that, or it's just going to become chronic. And when you're talking about a big piece of the defense, let's look at that word a couple ways. He is a tall dude, and he's also obviously got vertical height, jump.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've been
– physical
there, we win the air battles when Dudar's back there, either through his ability to contain who he's marking or just out-jumping him, you know?
Yeah.
And
bullying him around. He's just a bully back there.
Yeah, and it seems like when he's not back there, we cede that. We give that airspace up, you know?
Yeah, to a guy like Bruin, who looks like he's playing in your men's league and just having a beer at the pub, you know? He's like the least athletic-looking guy, and he's the guy that's going to sneak in there and get the cross. I mean, oh, so frustrating.
He's a crafty player.
Only
man.
Against only against BC, though. He had a hat trick last year, and he gets a brace this year. And I look at his stats.
He doesn't play BC.
He had 5 goals last year, and 3 of them came against DC. And then he has 2 again this year. I'm like, I don't want to see that guy again in a couple weeks when they play him, you know?
He's made us his special
prize. I guess, like, guard that guy. He's slow. Go get him. Put a body on him. He can't be running away from you, you know?
All right. Well, look, we gutted it out. It's a win.
Great.
I know your feelings about Perry. I'm sorry I mentioned that I said the guy's name, because he's been doing such a great job in midfield. You know, he's been
Perry.
Yeah.
He's been solid. You know,
I
and,
like him in the midfield. I just don't think he makes good decisions at all in defense. You know, and so like, is there? You know, we're stacked in offense. In midfield, one guy comes out. Andy Nahar's out for multiple games. You don't even notice it. The other guys fill right in. It's not the same situation on defense. As soon as the Dudar's out, you start looking around, like, trying to plug holes and trying to mix match. And there's not really a solid backup or an obvious choice to go fill in back there, you know?
Not at the moment. You know, you'd think when Dejan's healthy, Jakovic would just would slip right in there, you know, if Dudar got hurt. But you know, he seems to be out at the moment. Ethan White's out, so you're right. Right now in the back, the team's a little thin, and it'll be interesting against San Jose. I could see maybe Korb coming in and playing on the right side.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's done well in the time he's had on the field. But you know, referring back to Russell, I think Perry did give the guy a little too much room for the cross, but you can notice we'll see Russell just kind of lose his man too, and you could see Woolard's expression.
He was not too happy.
Yeah, he's yelling. Yeah. And that's kind of the difference of playing out wide and playing in the middle is you don't always think about that as a wide player, you know. Your focus isn't always – because as a wide player, oftentimes you can actually pass a offensive guy on in the box, whereas a center back, you know, you got to stick with him. So, you know, it's not always easy to change positions in the middle of a game, so.
Yeah. But you made a good point about what you prepare for mentally, because it seemed to me that that's what was clearly going on with Perry.
Yeah.
You know, and that he was, you know, he was in his midfielder mindset, and that's got to be a big adjustment for anybody to make to go, okay, now you're in the back line, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you'll hear any player say, no, it's no big deal. It's you know, it's on the field, so. But there's a lot that goes into it. It's more than that.
Yeah, it seems like it would be. I mean, coming up in there. So, hey, let's start looking ahead.
You know, just one thing that to file under, just totally random. 2 weeks ago, Taylor Twellman said, hey, you know, Dudar's just trying to do his best to give Willis the shutout. And it literally, like, less than a minute, we mentioned it last time, he scores. And what happened? John Hart starts talking about how good Willis is doing, how great he's playing, and then they score. I'm like, can these guys stop?
I saw it this
Don't
time,
jinx the goalkeeper anymore, man. It's totally – it doesn't have anything to do with anything, and it's not real.
Well, also,
it's funny to notice.
He'd also just mentioned what a great job Dudar had been doing back there, and you know how he was shutting down the defense, and then you know, like, I'm telling you, it was 30
I
seconds.
Know. Now I'm like aware of these
commentators
things. Yeah, man, they're jinxing them.
Yeah,
we can't do anything about that. But it's
leave the compliments till the end of the game, I guess.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, don't pop.
So we got a big showdown tomorrow.
Big team. San Jose's in first.
This is going to be a bit of a gut check, I think, for the team coming. You know, Saturday flying out to the West Coast, playing Wednesday against probably, arguably the hottest team in MLS right
now.
Yeah, leaders of the West. And you're right. I think we're starting back into, tougher matches.
Right. Now you got Wondolowski, who's the opposite of the way I described Bruin, right? He's crafty. He's a little quick. He gets in there, just finds a way.
Athletic.
Yeah, he's athletic. He finds a way to, like, sneak in there and get a little touch on the ball, and he's got a bunch of goals to show for it again. I think somebody was saying he's got, like, 42 goals over the last three seasons or some crazy number, you know?
I'm telling you, if he was an American player, if he didn't come through the college ranks, he'd be the highest paid player in MLS right now.
Yeah, you said that last week. I've been thinking about that a lot. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, no one has anyone scored more goals than he has in the past 2 years.
No, I mean, he just produces. That's just all he does. You know.
Yeah.
And he's such a cheeky player because he'll just totally be out of the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then. And then all it takes is he just takes his opportunities. And, I mean, I feel like he scores them 90% of the time. Anytime he gets a shot on goal, I feel like it's going in. It's gonna at least be on target. And, you know, he's a guy that he'll just lure you to sleep. He won't really do anything. He'll just, you know, ball comes into him. He'll just play it out and not really go at you. But when the ball gets in the box, man, is he dangerous. And that's something that every defender has to be aware of. Always know where he is.
It's a hard time to face that guy. And then he didn't even score in their last game, and they still win because that guy Leonard catches two goals too, you know. So it's like even if you get Wondolowski on a bad day, you got to watch out for the streaky Lenhart. And it's just, wow.
They're a strong team in, you know, from a lot of aspects. You know, the Earthquakes are definitely they're at the top of their bracket for a reason, you know. They're strong in the back, and like you said, they've got a bunch of weapons up front.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then there's the intangible that we're going to be in San Jose. We're going to be off our turf. So I'm looking at this road trip kind of as a piece right now. I feel like we got these next three games are kind of a little set and a little away set, you know. Fortunately, they're broken up in the middle with Toronto. But we're also going to be heading out into the Dynamo's brand-new stadium, first game there. I mean, think about those fans out there. That's going to be crazy. It's going to be on NBC Sports.
They're going to be looking for payback.
They're revenge hungry.
Why, you're painting the picture, and I hate it.
It's going to be a tough place to play. It's going to be
Well, San Antonio, San Jose, I noticed, though, when I was looking at the statistics for attendance, they're near the bottom also, which is unfortunate to have these two teams. They're probably the two hottest teams in MLS right now. At least they're up there. And both of them are struggling with attendance. So I don't know. Devin, do you ever play in San Jose? What's the feeling like compared to RFK? Is it going to be a big advantage for them? Do they have one of those great home crowds? Or
they don't. You know, they have a smaller stadium. So obviously lower numbers, it kind of feels like there's more people there. But I don't feel it has the strongest home field advantage. One of the things is actually I remember playing there. You know, I feel like we always play there during the summer was the sun would always be it was just terrible. I remember that one half would always just be awful and miserable, and you could see the ball about half the time. So that's
just on TV, and their keeper will wear a visor down at that one end just because it's so oppressive.
It must
be sighted right on an east-west axis, you know?
It is, and you would never think that a coin flip could actually be so advantageous as until you get to San Jose and try to play in going into the sun. So that's about the only thing that, I mean, it, you know, in terms of fans, they're not the most hostile. It's not the most intimidating atmosphere to play in. So, I mean, you saw DC go in there last year, and, you know, I thought DC, you know, did a good job of getting 3 points on the road.
We need to see another back and forth battle like with Houston, you know. I might see a lot of goals and just have to keep whoever scores last, you know, or scores the most.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, I think San Jose is a little bit better of a soccer team than Houston at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not as direct, and although they have Leinart, a big physical presence up top, they're a little more, they have a couple more soccer players than I guess Houston had on the field on Saturday. So it'll be interesting to
team.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how DC United matches up defensively against that. So, and I feel like the organization as a unit has been perpetually getting better throughout the year. So I don't really honestly think it'll be too much of an issue defensively against a team that likes to toka-toka, keep the ball and pass around and give them goes. Mm-hmm. Defensively, DC United seems pretty solid in that regard. It's kind of the physical matchups that are, I feel like, scary, especially when Dudar is out.
Yeah. Well, luckily, Wondolowski's not a big guy like when we had to play the Red Bulls, you know, Henri and Kenny Cooper. So maybe if you're going to be missing the big guy in the middle, maybe this is a good time, you know, get some speed back there. Because
I thought he
did a great job, you know. He's not nearly as big, but he controlled the ball back there. He played it out well, good clearances, you know. Just did a good job interrupting stuff enough when he came in.
He is good. Yeah, I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, he's solid.
Yeah, you know, obviously an unfortunate situation with his family. He had to I feel like he was starting to play really well and starting to get some time and maybe actually was competing to take Perry Kitchen's spot and then unfortunate with a – you know, the death in the family. So it'll be interesting to see if Benny decides to pick him maybe over Perry and putting Corbin on the right. Or we also have to keep in mind that they're traveling across country, playing Wednesday and coming back and playing Toronto, which is maybe more of a must win against Toronto considering it's on the East Coast or Eastern Conference team.
Eastern Conference, yeah.
So, you know, it'd be maybe Benny will make some lineup changes to maybe rest some guys.
I think he's going to rest Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, and
now the time is this it?
Well, there's multiple things. There's the thing that Eric always points out that Willis was struggles sometimes and bobbles the ball, and I felt that even though he got scored on, he had his hands on the ball. He should have stopped it. You know what I mean? It just squeaked right through. And it's a tough one, but you know he's made better saves than that. So, and against New York, it was wet, and but. That by itself is not a big deal, but because even as you pointed out, Eric, it continues to happen, maybe it's just something the coaches notice. And then also you're talking about the schedule, Devin, like coming back on Wednesday, traveling the East Coast. Maybe it's a good time just to give someone a rest, you know. Hamid's healthy. He's really good. And the final piece to that is that he said something on Twitter today, like, today is a good day. So I thought, well, maybe he found out he's going to get a start, you know, trying to read between the lines and read into things. But I don't know. I could see him getting a start finally.
I thought we agreed you weren't going to say the word Twitter on the podcast
anymore. But that's where I saw it. I'd be lying if I said old me or, you know.
I'm going to count how many times you say Twitter on the podcast.
I'll ring a bell.
I'm going to buffle a nickel every time you say it.
I'll edit them out. There'll be no proof.
Well, you know what?
Apparently, according to Mark, I mean, it's pretty important in terms of ticket sales, to be socially interactive with the fans.
Yeah. But hear what all he was saying. Let's go to that for 1 second. They had a contest to design the logo. Okay, they're engaging people. They're getting that two-way dialogue going on. And in my world, in like marketing and different people who are organizations and companies that are trying to get their presence out there, that's what the best ones are all doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeking that engagement. And I got to hand it to them. They're doing it great because – they've got super high engagement, especially for being, you know, kind of an outpost, as you said, Devin, of soccer.
In the smaller level clubs, you know, he knows from being with the Freedom, and he mentioned about the $1 million ad revenue or ad that you have to be creative. You have to find other ways than just throwing money at it, right? You're the New York Red Bulls. You could put a 10-story tall picture of Thierry Henry down in Times Square and people will notice, you know what I mean? But you're in San Antonio, you got to be creative.
Yeah.
And you know what was interesting? He touched on it a little bit. I guess we're kind of getting off track and getting back to the first segment. But was that it seems, I mean, San Antonio, the front office is kind of built around people who used to be in MLS and, you know, have experience dealing with Major League Soccer teams. And it seems that the new teams coming into MLS that are finding the success are teams like San Antonio that have people from other maybe original organizations and they're building from, you know, personnel from original organizations and, you know, they're putting new ideas and creative ways to get the fans involved, and
they're getting to the next level of
they're getting to the next level, and it seems, you know, you kind of worry. Not that DC United's in a bad place, because I think there's a lot of issues that go into it. But like Columbus, mm-hmm. even New York, is it, you know, the Dallas, is it the original teams? Are they missing something? Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Are they not
catching on? The old
dynasties
kind of resting on laurels.
Right. And then they got these.
Which is what I do worry about with your old, you know, your old school clubs. It's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, D.C. has other issues in terms of stadiums, and I seriously think the weather has been a huge issue so far.
Yeah, well, they'll be back in May, yeah. And so when they finally come home, hopefully that the weather will be nicer, people will be hungry to see them, because it seemed like they had a long homestand, too, you know, so a couple weeks mm-hmm. will go by, and I'm sure everybody will be hungry again to get out there and see United. I know I am. I want to get out there again, and hopefully they return from this road trip looking good, you know, picking up points, continuing yeah. this nice little streak. So, what about the lineup to wrap it up? Who do you guys predict is going to make the lineup this time? Last week it seemed obvious that there weren't going to be any changes, but it seems like there's obviously Dudar's out, but it seems like there's going to be at least a few changes.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Hamid in the goal.
Do you guys agree that maybe he'll get the chance to get in there?
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think it's a smart time to rest Willis.
Yeah, I don't, you know, as a player, I shouldn't call myself a player.
Of course you should.
As someone who played the game, I just
feel
like
player.
I'm a player, not a player. You know, it's like, granted, he did let that. It was a bit of a soft goal he let in, but I feel like he's done so much to keep the starting role. That I don't think it should be given to Bill at this moment, but it's not my call. Obviously, it's Benny's call. But you know, for me, I would think he should stay.
So you'd be surprised to see Bill in there.
I wouldn't be surprised, no. But for me, I think Willis should stay in, and then I'd put Corbin on the right. I'd put, you know, same pairing of McDonald, always solid, and Russell, who, you know, is solid when he starts there, and then, you know, Woolard on the left, who, by the way, got two assists, like first ever defender to get two assists, something
he's
like that.
He's playing great, man.
Yeah, but we've been talking about him going forward
and
turning, you know, his defensive position into a good offensive, you know, leverage.
Yeah.
Well, then, hold on 1 second. I just want to comment on what you're saying as you're doing your thing. I think Joe definitely has earned everything. I just thought tactically you might want to start Bill so that you can rest Joe a little bit, you know, because you've got so many games so close together. But maybe it flips the other way. Maybe you keep mm-hmm. Joe in now and then throw Bill in at Toronto to give him a bit of a softer start since he's been out for a while. But anyway, keep going with your lineup.
Good point. That's a good point. Who do I got? So, De Leon on the left. I'd put Saragossa. Actually, in the midfield, I thought he did well and give Perry a bit of break. You know, Perry did the whole Olympics, and he didn't even get a break. He got like a day break between the last Olympic game and then
he ran his ass off that whole
So I think he deserves a bit of a break. And Saragossa has been playing well. And I put Andy on the right, too. And obviously, D-Row and then keep the front two and three. That's
okay.
Me. Yeah, but how many times have I been right? Are we keeping track? Because I don't feel like
I've been
right.
I think you're probably right.
Well, in my mind,
yeah.
We all are. But whenever I talk to Ben, I just, he says, what the hell were you thinking?
Is that what he's
saying? So I don't
Wait, awesome. Does that mean he's listening to the show? That'd be great.
I can't.
I'll have to email it to him. Yeah, I was, go ahead, Eric. I'll do mine after.
I always just tend to agree with – I like to nod along with what Devin's saying. That sounded really strong to me. I mean, you know, there are a couple variables that I think could go in and out in midfield, but we don't have that many choices for defense, do we? And you've sort of kind of got to put the strongest players where you can. Obviously, you know, Woolard gets it. Russell gets it. And then I think Chris Korb has been solid. B-Mac, of course, you know. I don't know. Andy Nahar, huh? Starting Nahar. I was really liking what the chemistry that Cruz and De Leon had been having.
They do have a good one, yeah. I completely agree with that.
And I was liking Andy as the super sub. But maybe this time we switch it out and we switch that up and see if we can get a little Nahar
Dude, you pick who you want. This is fantasy. You pick who you want.
Yeah, just like us.
Yeah, I know.
Why? People are listening. Just kidding.
I'm throwing variables around it. You know, I'm riffing here. I'm thinking about the different player chemistries as we go. You got to have Dero in there. And I do like Saragossa back, you know. But I think for me, I like the chemistry of when Cruz and De Leon are on the field together. I'd use Andy as a super sub. And then up top, you gotta have, you know, Pontius builds excitement, right? Wasn't that the old one?
What was that shirt you sent to Passat? That was hilarious.
That was great, yeah.
Pathy, I told you. I saw the shirt. I wasn't making it up.
You thought that was just
I thought, you know, you can understand why I think that now, but so, yeah.
So our starting 11s aren't at all far off.
No, I had the same thing. I had Woolard, Russell, and BMAC in the back. I was a question mark at right defense just because I don't know if Benny's going to put Kitchen back there. I would not like to see him back there just as a fan.
Duly noted.
Yeah, okay, so obviously. But you guys have both said Corb, so I guess that's a good choice. And then, of course, up top, Pontius and Santos. There's no way you're breaking that up right now. I have Dero in the middle. And then, you know, Cruz got a break. Neither of them had a break, De Leon or Cruz. And Cruz got a break in the game last time. I don't know if it was because the game was getting a little chippy and maybe there was a little personal stuff with Houston, but I think De Leon's going to get the break, and I think Nahar's going to get the start for him. I've been thinking the college season in MLS difference is a big deal.
Yeah, I've heard you say that.
And
yeah.
Nahar got a few minutes, so I see Nahar kind of getting a start for De Leon on the road, and then Hamid and Nicole, I don't know. I guess Corb is the thing, you know. The right defense is going to be where I'm going to probably be most surprised.
Yeah, I mean, all those are good lineups, you know.
Yeah.
DC's got a pretty deep team right now, so it's...
So what do you think? Will it be 8 unbeaten? Will it be a tie? 1 point, 3 points? Do they get first 3-game winning streak on the back of the first 2-game winning streak right away?
You know what? Of all the people we're going to play, I'm going to say it's least likely to happen at San Jose.
Yeah, what a statement it would make, though, huh?
If it was, you know, let's put the Union in this spot in the schedule, and I would say, yeah. Let's put, you know, the Impact, even the Crew, I'd give higher odds. The Rapids, I'd give higher odds. The Earthquakes right now, probability low.
So do you think they at least steal a point?
I would love if they would steal
so
a point on the road. I'm a fan of United, so I'm not going to go negative on it, but I will be surprised if we win or tie at San Jose.
All right.
I'd be pleasantly surprised. You know, I have faith in everything.
I see us getting a tie again. They seem to do the tie thing right now, and they're playing so well. I think, you know, Benny said they're having a chip on their shoulder, and this team's finally clicking, and, you know, they're like, they didn't back down against Houston. I don't think they care that they're going to San Jose. And Devin said it's not that big of a place. Not, you know, the atmosphere is not that bad. So I don't think they care. I think they're going to ride right in. And, you know, if they can get that defense to do a good job without Dudar, and I think they can get the tie, man.
I'm pretty optimistic.
Do it. Okay. Go out on a limb.
I'm gonna go 1-0.
Nice.
I'm gonna go 1-0 with Dero.
Oh.
On
purpose.
Mm-hmm. He loves. What
I don't care.
Oh, you know what? He's got to get one, right? He's got to get one against a former team because that's what he does. And I've taken to heart when you said he was a June bloomer, you know, when you talked about his season last year. And I've been just quietly thinking to myself that that's what's going to happen this year. You know, he's going to have a June, July, August. It's going to blow everybody's mind, you know.
Out of the water.
He's a June bloomer, you know.
That'd be great. All right. Oof. Well, anybody got any shout-outs?
I got a shout-out to Mark Washoe.
Mark Washoe. Shout-out to Mark Washoe for coming on.
Thanks for joining us, man. That was
we appreciate it. Thanks for the insight.
He's a
very,
very knowledgeable individual when it comes to sports franchises. So
very, very nice.
I could learn. Anyone can learn a lot from him. So
seems like he's doing a lot of stuff right everywhere he
goes.
Yeah,
he does. He seems to have the touch, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Hey, you know, that almost legitimizes the whole Fans of United podcast.
Well, we're going to follow that up next week with another good guest, so I don't want to say it because I'm always afraid that it will fall through. I'm one of those people that believes in the jinx, obviously, you know. But I think we have another good, solid guest next week. So hopefully we continue
good,
to do
good.
That.
So you have a shout-out there, Chris?
Eric, your mom's coming on next week.
Shout-out to Eric's mom and Baba Booey.
Baba Booey to y'all. Now, I got a shout-out to my little girl, Ruby, turned 9 yesterday.
Yes.
So, happy birthday, Ruby.
Ruby.
Did you get my text message? I said happy belated birthday, so.
Oh, I don't think I looked at that. I've had my head in this whole, dude, I've been thinking nothing but baseball for like 10 days. It's
horrible nightmare. At least you're getting paid for it.
Yes, it's a gig, you know, like all.
All right. Well, I don't really have any shout-outs. I just appreciate everybody that supports us and asks when the next episodes are coming out and people that are listening to them. I see that more people do it every week, so I appreciate that. The more people are following us on Twitter. Leanne Esten was asking about Dudar for our Twitter question, but we already answered that, so appreciate her even just responding. And a shout-out to you guys, man, just being part of this. It's a good time. It's a fun time.
Oh, yeah. I want to shout out to Women United FC. I'm with you on the whole pork thing. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We get you.
All right, guys.
Right on.
Until next time.
Thank you, fans.
Appreciate you. Enjoyed episode 10.
Thanks, everyone.